Have a seat. So a while ago, perhaps a generation ago, I decided that I liked going for walks so much that I wanted to take my walks to the next level. I decided to take them as hikes. And hiking was fun. I enjoyed hiking in the woods, surrounded by the trees and nature. And I thought, this is good, but I can make it even better. So I decided to try backpacking. Oh, yes. Backpacking was a big magical unicorn for me. I picked up magazines called Backpacker, and I read all the articles, and I looked at the pictures, and oh, the prime issue came out, the buyer's guide. Oh my gosh. Have you seen these things, this equipment? High-tech fabrics, excellent footwear, rugged soles, freeze-dried food, which isn't actually as good as it looks on the cover. But I collected it all. I saved up my money, and I went to the nearest REI. Y'all have REI up here? It's like the summit of the backpacking purchasing world. It's got everything. Winter hiking, summer hiking, Arctic, desert, the Camino, everything you could ever want is there. And so that's where I went. And I bought a giant backpack. It has an internal frame. It has a little pouch where you can put the rain flies, so if it rains in your hike, you just pull that out, put it on top. It's got a space to put in a tent. Oh yeah, I bought a tent too, a special tent. Had this rain fly, had a little portico in the front, yes, where I could sit like this while it rained, but not be in the tent, but not get rained on outside the tent. So cool. And it was like this big when you fold it up, and then you have to put all the little sticks together, and then you put it into the ground and everything. It looks so cool. And then I bought special boots, and I bought all the things, camp gear, a little camp stove, you know, with the white fuel, and you start a fire, and then a little, tiny little pot that I put my freeze-dried food in, make it hot, which didn't make it any better. I got all the things, a little radio that you crank because it's battery-operated. I didn't hear a thing. It doesn't actually work. But I spent a lot of money creating the look of the picture on the buyer's guide on page 58. I looked so good. I looked like a professional backpacker. And I put all that stuff in that backpack, and then I put that backpack on, and I walked into the woods. And oh my God, I went a half a mile, half a kilometer, and I was like, I'm so done. Good thing I bought the pole to kind of pull me along. I spent so much money, and suddenly the woods was not a fun walk anymore. I was so far away from that ideal that I dreamt of, and I was burdened with all this stuff. I hear a lot of laughing. I think you know what I mean. That's what happens to David in the first reading today. David knows what it's like to be a king. God has told David, I'm going to make a great king out of you. God has anointed David to the greatest role in the community, to be the leader of a great nation. And he does a really good job. And finally, at the end, he says, I finally have the best backpack in the whole catalog, a house of cedar. This is great. I think God needs a house of cedar too. And that's where things unravel for David. We just got through last week with Jesus telling the disciples he ordered them to take nothing for their journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money. Don't even bring two tunics. Jesus says, keep it simple. I'm with you on this journey. That's all you need. And that's what David forgets. In the first reading today, he gets so wrapped up in all the things that being the king and the leader gets him, fantastic clothes, musicians, the best food, the best places to go and be, success. That's intoxicating, is it not? And now he has this house. And David begins to lose himself and his relationship with God, because it's not really David and his agency that gets him all of these things. It's God. He begins to put all the stuff between him and God. He begins to put the stuff ahead of God, because God, in all of God's glory, suddenly isn't God enough until God has a house of cedar. You see where the problem is? You see where it starts to come a little bit undone? We don't need a lot of stuff to take on the journey. David knows he should know better than anybody else. After slaying Goliath with nothing but a little river stone and a sling, he should know that you don't need a lot of stuff to have that deep relationship with God, the relationship where God abides within. David is allowed to move the Ark of the Covenant, that sort of liminal dwelling place for God, or for the covenant between God and humanity at least. David gets to move that. It's within his right and his realm and his agency as the king to move this covenant box around, but no one gets to tell God and decide where God lives. No one gets to decide how God will act, where and to whom, and no one gets to decide how God will move about in the community and interact with people. When the Israelites were journeying from Egypt all the way through to the Promised Land, and God makes reference to that here, God circulated as a spirit through the community. Imagine a vast plain with thousands of people in it, all in their little family groups, in their friend groups, in their little community groups, their neighborhoods, so to speak. And imagine, if you will, a red smoke, like a mist, moving through the collections and groupings of people, like a river. The little eddy over here with this community and this family, God lingers a little bit and sort of swoops over here and meets with this family and slides on over here. This is God's spirit circulating and moving through the Israelites while they're in the wilderness. And now here comes David to say, we're going to put God right here. God doesn't want that. God is very sensitive about that. And we know this because all of a sudden God comes back at David with a whole bunch of I statements. What is God's name? I am. I. God says, I am. And then comes back with God's own identity in everything that God says back to David through Nathan. He says, I have not lived in a house since the day I brought the people of Israel from Egypt, but I have been moving about in a tent, in a tabernacle, circulating through the neighborhoods and the communities and the family groups. I never spoke a word to any of your leaders requesting a house of cedar. God says, no, I will make for you a great name. David does not make a great name for himself. David's got a lot of character flaws, and this is kind of one, but we're all character flawed, so we're not going to dwell on that, but we're going to dwell on what happens. God says, I will make a name for you. I do that. You don't do that. You live by faith. God says, I will appoint a place for my people Israel. I will appoint judges. I will give you rest from your enemies. I will raise up offspring. I will establish the throne of the kingdom forever. You do you. God says, I will do me. God is clear and pushes back when David claims too much agency in success. What are we expected to do? Jesus tells us what we're expected to do, because Jesus circulates in the community the exact same way that God's Spirit circulated in the wilderness amongst all the people. Jesus goes to this person's house, has dinner, goes on over here to a portico, meets with somebody else, chats with them. Jesus spends very little time in the temple. He spends most of his time out circulating amongst the people. That's where the cathedral is, amongst the people. It's not necessarily a house. This is beautiful. There are cathedrals in Europe that I've seen that bring a tear to my eye. They're so beautiful. Notre Dame, the cathedral in New York City. There's a cathedral in Washington with stained glass windows that paint the interior with a rainbow whenever the sun comes out. Those move me. But it's not the building that moves. It's God. We know that prayer is not, we don't begin prayer. You understand? When we pray, when we feel called to pray, we're actually responding to God speaking to us. That's where prayer comes from. We don't initiate it, we respond. And so when I walk into a cathedral, if you walk into a building and you are so moved, it's not the building that's moving you. It's your spirit, your heart, praying back to God and saying, wow. God seeks to dwell within this cathedral, within this temple, within this Ark of the Covenant. Some people will say they don't experience God in a church building. They experience God in the woods. And I get it. I too. Those trees. I've never seen trees so tall in my life as I have when I came here. So tall. They reach all the way up to heaven. And God's Spirit follows those trees down, and I am moved. As moved as I am, if not more, than when I walk into those beautiful cathedrals. And it is a prayer that God comes to me and I pray back. What are we to do with this awe, with this sense of knowing where the cathedral is, where the temple of God is? Well, we are expected to build up these true containers for God. Just like David said, he wasn't entirely wrong. But the container that we are to build up wherein God will dwell is the container in each and every person that we encounter. Build you up. Make you strong. Make you a place where God dwells. Make you feel that awe, that wow, when your heart prays in response to God speaking to you in this temple. We are called to do just what Jesus did. Build one another up. Keep telling one another that you are the dwelling place of God. You are the dwelling place of the Almighty. You are where God comes to earth to speak through you to others so that others know that God speaks to them as well. God seeks to dwell within this temple. And our job as God's people is to follow where God leads. In the Exodus, as they journeyed through the wilderness, God led them in the front by a pillar of flame, and behind by a pillar of cloud. And God led them on this meandering journey. If you've ever seen a map of the journey through the wilderness, Moses had no idea where he was going. He was just all over the place. And in that all over the place journey, Israel encountered lots of people. The wilderness was not empty. They encountered others for the purpose of reflecting back upon themselves to see how far they've come. How far they've grown as a unique people of God. And they followed. Wasn't always easy. Sometimes it was very painful. That is the journey of faith. But the constant is that God is always with us, journeying with us, circulating amongst all of us as a community, and then dwelling in the evening in the temple within each of us. What are we called to do as God's people? Is to go ahead and build that dwelling place for God. Not out of cedar, not out of marble or brick, but out of love, out of compassion for one another, compassion for ourselves, forgiveness when we, like David, get ahead of ourselves, forgiveness for ourselves, forgiveness for others, so that we can all get back on that journey with God at the fore and at the aft, leading us on our faith journey. So, build one another up. Remind one another in difficult times and in good times. Remind one another that you are the dwelling place of God, that God settles deep within your heart, speaks to you in language that only you know. And when you pray, you're responding to God who's already talking with you. That is the true temple of God. this little part deep within ourselves, which may only be this big, but it is as big as a forest. It is as big as a cathedral. It is as big as an ocean. And it is the dwelling place of the eternal within you. And that is the good news.